The brig area was at one end of the barracks area, with only one exit to the rest of troop deck. On their way out, the escapees emptied the shelves of the lockers available. Three bottles of spray cleaner, two mops, two brooms, and a squeegee. One stuck the canister of toilet bowl cleaner in his pocket. They had the guards' weapons, the canister of riot spray from the kiosk, and the guards' gas masks and filters, a total of four. They had the little repair kit from under the desk, and the damage control locker contents. Hammers, pry bars with one end pointed and one flat, tubes of adhesive and dispensers that looked, to Cecilia, very much like something builders use to caulk windows. Chief Jones had explained how they'd use them, and they'd ransack every damage control locker they passed. Rope, wedges. Soon they looked, in Cecilia's opinion, like a combination of mountain climbers and repairmen. At this time of day, the four nearest squad bays were always empty. Cecilia and Miranda went out to scout, carrying mops, buckets, and cleaning supplies as usual, with two of the men pretending to guard them. They made it to the first lavatory, where they could see down another empty corridor and wave the rest forward. The men took a few minutes to depilate their faces, making them look more like the beardless mutineers. The women could do nothing about their hair.
But it's grown out a little, and from a distance, well, we might be taken for men. Some of us, anyway. And you, Cecilia, if we get you into a uniform...
Uniforms they could find in the squad bay lockers, along with a variety of other useful objects. Personal knives, ration bars, more gas masks, and pea suits. Miranda, in uniform, looked as perfectly groomed as in her usual expensive silks. Cecilia looked rumpled. She glowered at her mirrored image.
How do you do it?
Do what?
Look like that. Do you have a spell you put on cloth so it won't wrinkle when it's on you?
No. I don't know how it works. It just does.
Once the groups separated, Cecilia quickly lost track of the turns, the ascents and descents, through unmarked passages. She struggled to keep the coil of rope she'd been given from falling off her shoulder, and the several tubes of adhesive tucked into her uniform poked her uncomfortably.
How do they know they're going the right way?
Yet Chief Jones hardly hesitated, moving with swift silence. They came out into a little room whose far side curved noticeably.
The hall?
Cecilia had volunteered for this, but now that she saw that curve, the reality of what she was about to do struck her cold. Chief Jones was already slapping squares of sticky patch to the overhead and bulkheads. It made no sense to Cecilia, but she didn't ask. Jones always had a reason, whatever it was. After another two patches, Jones grinned at her.
Blanking the sensors buys us some time.
One of the men had already carted the suit lockers. These EVA suits were heavy-duty models, intended for hours of use outside, with their size color-coded on the left shoulder. Jones quickly sorted them into a sequence of sizes and started them into their suits, tallest first. Cecilia was third. She stepped into the open lower legs, and someone behind her lifted the back of the suit until she could work her arms into it. Then it wrapped around to overlap the front section. Chief Jones checked the lower seals, helped seal the helmet, and then loaded the dual air tanks, which should supply 4 hours of air. She attached Cecilia's load of rope, tubes, dispenser to the suit exterior, and waved Cecilia to one corner while the rest suited up, working in pairs. Then came the tedious business of working through the small airlock, one at a time. Cecilia had no idea how big a cruiser was, and seeing the outside didn't really help. Its surface, matte black, looked as if it had been cut out of the starry expanse, or as if it were a cave rather than an object that rounded out. Worse than that was the sudden loss of gravity. Outside the ship's hull, the artificial gravity had no force. She felt disoriented and was very glad of the safety line clipped to a ring on a sticky patch outside the hatch. As she'd been told to do, she followed the line from one clip to another, around a dull black plane that fell away from her in all directions. Suddenly, she saw something different, something glittery. Chief Jones's directions had been clear. If it sticks up, break it off. If there's a hole with something in it, glue it up. Cecilia stared at a transparent flattened dome with what looked like an array of daisies under it. It wasn't exactly sticking up, but she couldn't see how squirting glue at it would damage it. Something tapped her arm and she jumped. Another figure, pointing at the dome. It held a large hammer in one hand and very slowly leaned over to put a pair of sticky patches on the hull beside the dome. Then it stepped onto the sticky patches and swung the hammer. Cecilia had never really paid attention to gravitational effects before, and had certainly never wondered what happened when someone in zero-G performed a violent maneuver. As the person beside her swung down with the hammer, and the hammer cracked the dome, its feet tore away from the sticky patches, and it rotated overhead, feet describing a broad arc, and hammer swinging away from the dome towards Cecilia. She grabbed for it automatically, and the other person's momentum rotated around this new center, wrenching her shoulder. Then the person bounced off the hull and rotated back the other way. One foot caught on a sticky patch, and the inertia rotated his body around the long axis this time. Finally, the wild gyrations damped, and the figure tapped Cecilia's arm. She presumed it was a sort of thanks. Then, very carefully, the figure knelt and hacked at the cracked dome. This gave access to the delicate floral shapes of the sensor heads themselves. The petal shapes came away easily. The other figure went on to another dome, leaving Cecilia to peel them out one by one. It was ridiculous. It was like the childhood game of plucking petals from a sunflower and counting out the answer to some childish questions.
They find us? They find us not. They kill us. They kill us not.
Not, according to the last of the petals she tossed away. She took her dispenser of adhesive and squirted globs of it over the ends of the stalks to which the flowers had been attached. According to Chief Jones, this would make repair very difficult indeed. Cecilia wondered, if this ship were ever found, what some repair doc would say about the damage they were doing. She, a taxpayer, was probably costing herself a lot of money. She decided that if she survived this, she would not prosecute herself. She looked around and noticed a metallic stick protruding through the hull covering a short distance away. She started to move toward it, and her tether caught her short. She almost unclipped before remembering the person she'd caught and saved. Instead of unclipping, she added a length to her tether, carefully, and made her way over to the stick. It seemed shorter, and as she watched, it crept down past her waist toward her knees. She gave it a whack with her glue tube and found herself hanging by her tether. That didn't work. She pulled herself in until she was clinging to the last attachment point. Then she thought to squirt more adhesive around the base of the rod. When it slowed, she formed a large glob on the tip. The stick didn't move. She hoped it couldn't. Cecilia had no part in the assault on the shuttle bay. Chief Jones had put her around the hull curve and told her to lie flat. She had the pleasant task of watching her oxygen level crawl down as time passed, while she wondered what was going on a meter below her and all through the ship. The others of the outside team, she knew, were surrounding the shuttle hatch, where they hoped the mutineers would come out to save the rest of the FTL nodes from gluey destruction. They seemed confident that they could disarm such a group and steal a shuttle of some kind, and Jones had promised to pick her up. It seemed a meager chance to Cecilia. As she had faced reality in those long months of apparent coma, she faced it now. She would probably be dead in a few hours, her long life over. She would like to have known if Ronnie and Rafa were doing all right, what Bruin was up to, if Miranda could possibly get that girl Anceli out safely. But life wasn't always cooperative, and she expected to die without knowing. At least they'd had a chance, and she'd bought them that. She reflected a moment on the irony of someone widely renowned as selfish having humbled herself for all those weeks just to have a chance at breaking some others out of jail. She lay trying to rest easy and conserve her oxygen as Chief Jones had recommended, and almost dozed off in the peaceful, dark silence, when a faint vibration in the cushiony hull covering roused her.
Is it over? Have they already extracted a shuttle? And is someone coming to retrieve me?
She opened her eyes to look without moving, and saw dark shapes against the starfield moving toward her.
Odd.
They were coming from the wrong direction. She lay very still, reviewing in her mind the exact sequence of movements that had brought her here.
Yes, that way is the shortest route to the shuttle bay. And this way leads around the circumference of the ship. But no one is supposed to be coming that way. All the other personnel hatches were glued shut. Weren't they?
The cutouts enlarged, changed shape, and finally her eyes adjusted to the perspective, and she realized they were almost on her. They held weapons, real weapons. They had to be the mutineers, and they'd come up behind her friends. Without even thinking, she pumped the glue gun and took careful aim at one target, then another. First, the leader's rearmost foot, a half meter from her head, adhering to the hull so that he lurched forward off balance. She got another arm as it brushed past his side.
The Serrano Legacy, Against the Odds, is continued on the next CD.